Hello, everyone. My name is Maddie Thomas, and I am a very grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon with Alateen Participation. First and foremost, I want to thank you all so much for being so welcoming. I have to thank Yvonne. She is the hostess with the mostest. She picked me up on time. She was there. She took me to eat to this soul food place. I think I told y'all about it this morning. It was delicious. When she says, I'm taking you to some soul food, I'm thinking soul, S-O-U-L. But no, she says S-O-L. And it was Puerto Rican food, and it was absolutely fabulous. Then she took me to the forest. These big, beautiful trees. I've never seen this before. Just amazing. And then she drove me around and we went to a meeting. Awesome. Thank you. Owen, he called me. He sent me emails. He stayed in contact. He said, stayed in touch to make sure to see if I needed anything, if I was good. Thank you, Owen. And then this morning, thank you all for that. For those of you, especially you online, we had an awesome time at the workshop, did we not? Did y'all enjoy that workshop this morning? Yes, thank you. Well, I've gotten all that out the way. So let me tell you a little bit about me. I'm a native Houstonian, as can you tell my southern drawl? I'm from Texas, the big state of Texas. I'm a native Houstonian. I was born in Houston, Texas, and I grew up in the projects called Fillfort. My mom had me at 15 years old, and she has six of us. Now, you would think having the first one, what you had to do to keep having them. So, I did not grow up in an alcoholic home. My dad was stricken with polio when we were very young, and this was in the 50s. So, my dad was stricken with polio. And he lived with us until he couldn't live with us anymore. And my mom stuck with six children. She used to always tell us that I was the reason she didn't have a childhood. And I used to always tell my siblings, she's gonna say that one time too many. And she did. And I said, you should have kept your legs closed. Well, you know, I want you to know that was the first time and last time I said that to her, okay? Because I almost lost my teeth. In my home, there was not alcoholism, but all around us, there was. On my dad's side of the family, he was the youngest of 14, and his siblings were alcoholics, his sisters and his brothers. And his sisters married alcoholics. And his sisters were beautiful women, beautiful. But every time they got drunk, they would fight. And all of them died of alcoholism. And the men would beat them in the face. Now, my mom's side of the family, they were not alcoholics. But my mom's brothers, she had five, and her brothers were very well known in the community because they provided other community services. So, growing up in the projects, my mom used to always tell us, you're going to have to be, and she talked about education all the time. And she would tell us, you're going to have to be smarter than them. You're going to have to be better. You're going to have to work harder than them. And she used to tell us that all the time. And she told us, don't have any babies. And she used to tell us that. So when I graduated from high school and went to college, mind you, my mom was 15 when she had me. My mom went back to school and got her GED. Then my mom went to nursing school and she moved us out of the projects. She led by example, but my mom was a very angry woman. And I'll talk a little bit more about that as I get into it. When I came out of college, I moved back home. I'm living home in my mom's house, and you know what it's like living in your mama's house. It's always her house, her rules. I have a son. I get pregnant, I have a son. And I move to the southwest side of town because I'm working. And I'm living on the southwest side of town, and this young couple moves up from Kingsville, Texas. and she's pregnant, and we become friends. And we decide to give them a baby shower. And during this baby shower, my house was a drop-off house for my sisters and their two boys. They would drop them off. So I come next door to check on the boys, but when I come back, there's this guy sitting in there, bloodshot eyes, big cowboy hat, cowboy boots, and he takes one look at me and he says, "You come here." I said, "Me? No." He said, "Yeah, you." See, the men I dated, they wore three-piece suits, shiny shoes. They were professional, and he did not meet the, nope, not at all. Well, 42 years later, okay? But he met my son. And I don't know how, I really couldn't get that story how he met my son, but he did. And my son used to say things to me like, "Maddie, why don't you date CT?" I'm like, "CT? Oh, he's a good guy." This is a 7-year-old telling me that he's a good guy. My son never liked anybody I dated. Never. Well, eventually I did date CT. And he was a good person. We get married. We have a child. We buy a house. We buy this house and we move a little further southwest. And you would think I'm working, he working. We had it going on. And we did for a minute, but we had a housewarming party. And all of his friends came, my friends came. And one of his friends came in the house and he looked and he says, "Oh, Maddie, this is a nice house. You won't have it long." Little did I know how true those words were. Because, see, one day I come home, we have no lights. Another day I come home, we have no gas. One day I come home, we have no lights, no gas, no water. I put him out. I put him out. My mom made sure that he had a place to stay when I put him out. I want you to know I didn't talk to my mom for 10 years. I held a resentment toward her. And I knew how to do that because, see, my mom punished us with silence. And not talking to my mom for 10 years, I want you to know those were some good 10 years, okay? I did not miss it. But I was angry with her because, see, now one time did she call and to see what was going on with her daughter. She didn't know that we had no lights, we had no gas, we had no water. She didn't know that. We should have been living like this. We lived so low. I would suit up and dress up every day going to work. You know that mask we wear? I put that mask on and I go home. I go to work. And I sit down and I do my to-do list for work. Every day I would do my to-do list. But at 5 o'clock, I was to go home and kill CT. That was my only thought. He needed to die. Well, I want you to know my sister's a police officer, my nephew's a police officer, my cousin's a police officer. And I used to always try to think ways that he could die. So I called my sister one day and I said, "Pumpkin, if I mix some cocaine and rat poison together and CT took it and he died, would I go to jail?" She said, "Yep, can't go to jail." So we're living like this for a while. This is the 80s now, the early 80s. Lifetime Movie Channel comes out. Cable TV is introduced in the 80s. Lifetime Movie Channel come out. I love the Lifetime Movie Channel. I call it How to Kill Your Husband and Get Away with It, okay? However, I love there was one movie that I really, really, really loved. It was The Burning Bed. Have y'all seen that movie, The Burning? I love that movie. That was a woman scorned. Her husband was an alcoholic. He was abusive. And she tried to burn him up. We're back together. He's doing his thing. One day he comes in and he's full, and I'm in his face. I'm going at it. You know how we do it. He pushed me.
He pushed me so hard till I slid across that room. Now, I want you to know, no man had ever put his hands on me. And on my mom's side of the family, men did not hit women. And no man had ever hit me. And I don't know what possessed him that day to push me, but he did. I got up, I fixed my clothes, went and sit on the sofa, lit a cigarette, turned the TV on, and I sit and I listen. So I was listening for him to start snoring. You know that noise that they make when they fool and it rattles the house. I'm listening. And when I heard him, I went to the garage, I got the fluid, I go back to the bedroom and I cover him with the lighter fluid. And I stand at the foot of the bed with a cigarette lighter, flicking it, tell him to wake up and tell me why I shouldn't send him to hell. My son heard me screaming at him. And my son said, if you do this, we won't have anybody. And I called my girlfriend. I said, I got to go. Because see, I had done a whole lot of other things prior to that. And I told her, I got to go because if I don't, I'm going to kill CT and I'm going to be in prison. And my kids won't have anybody. You know, I grew up in the church. And I used to say, oh God, I can't wait till I turn 18. I'm not ever going to church again. I didn't like the pastor. I didn't like his wife. I didn't like his daughter. I didn't like anything about the church because the only thing I saw was preacher getting fat, getting money, and we were poor. I didn't like the church. I told my girlfriend, I said, I gotta go. And we went looking for a place to live, for me to live. Driving in the neighborhood, we find a house. It's in a cul-de-sac, and it has a for sale sign on it with a number to call. I called that number. For the first time, I told somebody everything that was going on with me, everything that was going on in my home. And that man listened. And he said to me, Miss Thomas, you want that house? I'll make it your house. Come to my office. And he made an appointment. I went to, if any of you familiar with Houston, we have a Galleria. And I went to that Galleria area and I went to his office. And I want you to know when I walked out of his office, it was him and an attorney. And when I walked out of that office, I had the deed to that house. No money down, but a promise to pay. And I did. Now, and I used to say, if only he's not there, everything would be okay. If only he wasn't there, everything would be okay. He ain't there. And I find myself standing in the middle of my living room, screaming to the top of my voice, and he wasn't even there. And I say, God, now I'm calling on God. You know how we do it. Even though we don't believe, we still gonna call on him. And I say, God, I just need a good man, one who don't do drugs, one who don't drink. I just need a good man. And be careful what you pray for. Because see, God does answer prayers. Because see, I met this guy, a good man. He didn't do drugs, he didn't drink. He was a good man. But my God, he was boring. He would always do things to make me happy. And I would always complain. And he would say to me, Matt, I'm always short. He would always say that, Matt, I'm always short. My husband and I, he's doing his thing. I'm living my life. He's living his life. Because see, I had left him before. We got back together, left him before. And he had tried to get sober. He had been to some AA treatment facilities and had been to a couple of meetings, but it never lasted. And you know how they have those family meetings when your loved one is in treatment? They have those family meetings. So they called us the first time we go in treatment, they call us for a family meeting. And I go. All these women sitting in a circle, they boo-hooing and crying. I just want to kill myself. And they just, all they're doing is just whining and crying about committing suicide. And I'm sitting there looking. I raised my hand. They finally call on me. And the only thing I could say is, kill him. You know, watch yourself. Kill him. And I said, this is not for me, because I am not going to kill me. But now we're separated. Well, while we're separated, he decides to get sober. Just imagine, he finally decided to get sober. We ain't together. But he does. He's getting sober. And after being sober 3 years, he decided he wanted his family back. So it's my birthday, May 10th. It's my birthday, and he calls me up and he says, Maddie, can I come and have a gift for you? And I say, sure. And he comes over and he brings me this beautiful emerald and diamond ring. And he says, this is for you. And then he goes on to tell me about being sober and everything and working the program. And if anybody should enjoy this sobriety, it should be me. And I'm thinking, you're darn right, it should be me. But, you know, we had been that separation and back and that separation and back. And so when he got ready to leave, he invited me on a date. And I told him I had to think about it. So when he leaves, I tell him I think about it, I call him. So when he leaves, I call my girlfriend. I go over her house because her mom's in town and I need to talk to Mama D. See, Mama D had been married for about 50 years, and Mama D had been through a lot of things with her husband, said I need to talk to a married woman because, see, a single woman couldn't tell me how to have a relationship. So I need to talk to Mama D. So I go over there and I talk to Mama D and I say, see, T wants us to get back together. And she said to me, Maddie, y'all not divorced. He's still your husband. If you want to get back with him, that's your business. Nobody else's business. I said, okay. So I called him up from her house. I called him up and the conversation went like this. I say, hey. He says, hey, I said, you still want to go on that date? He says, yeah. He starts stuttering. So I hang the phone up because he said, yeah. And I look at Mama Dad, I say, he got a woman over there. She said, no, man. I said, yes, he do. He got a woman over there. So I go home, I get cute, and I drive over to his apartment. I knock on the door. He comes to the door. He opens it, lights low, music soft, and she is sitting on the sofa. I loved it. I walk in, I give a big smile, I say, hi, my name is Maddie. And I shake her hand and I sit down right beside her. CT's in the kitchen and he's studying again. Tell me, do I want some to drink? Yeah, I take some water. And he brings me some water. I take a sip and I look at him. I say, CT, we need to walk her to her car because we have a date. And we walked her to her car and we went on our date. See, it was all good because, see, we had not lived together for 3 years. 3 years we had not lived together. He's living his life, I'm living mine, and it was okay. We walked her to her car and we went on our dates. Well, come to find out, his sponsor told him he needed to date me. So that's what he's doing, inviting me. But I don't think his sponsor meant for him to invite me on a date and he have another woman over there. I don't think that's what his sponsor meant. But anyway, so there's a conference. My husband loves conferences. And there's a conference in Beaumont. And he invited me to go to this conference. So I go to the conference. Of course, they have Al-Anon at this conference. So I go to the Al-Anon meetings. It was nothing like what I was first introduced to. Room full of people sitting around talking, sharing, and they're talking about them. Now, one time did I hear them talk about their alcoholic loved one. They was talking about the things they were doing for them. That's what I'm thinking. That's what I need. Because, see, I was still angry at him. I was angry. I was resentful because we had lost a lot. And I was angry. And I needed to understand if we was to have a relationship, I needed to learn how to get past that. So we come home after the weekend, I say, I need find me an Al-Anon meeting like what I experienced up in Beaumont. So off I go looking for a meeting. And I want you to know my husband has a big personality. He's known all over Houston. There's not too many meetings Al-Anon that's with an AA club that don't know him. So I go to this Al-Anon meeting, and first thing a person says to me, "Oh, you're CT's wife. He's so wonderful." Not going there. I finally went to a meeting where they knew him, but now one person said how wonderful he was. Also, they were talking about themselves and what they were doing in Al-Anon, just like I experienced in Beaumont. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to this meeting. And I did. I started going to this meeting. But now one time, I'm going to this meeting, and I'm seeing people come into the rooms, newcomers like myself, and how they were being welcomed in the rooms and so forth. So they have a group conscious. Now I've been going to this meeting for about 6 months, and they need to have a group conscious, a business meeting. And during this meeting, they need a secretary. Now, they hadn't had a secretary in a long time. And when they talked about having a secretary and nobody raised their hand, I raised my hand. And when I raised my hand, everybody looked at each other. Finally, they said, "Okay, well, I want you to know when I left that meeting that night, I was the secretary, okay?" But see, she wasn't there that night. Everybody got a her. I don't know about y'all, but in Houston, every group got a her. And she wasn't there that night. But let me tell you, at 8 a.m., 8 a.m. the next morning, my phone rings. I answer it. CT and I in the kitchen. He was having coffee. And the phone rings. I answer it, and it's her. And the conversation went like this: "Hi, Maddie, good morning." I say, "Hi." And she introduced herself. Well, I knew who she was because I knew the voice. And she says, "I understand you were elected secretary," and she began to tell me why I could not be the secretary for the group. I want you to know I stopped listening to her because, see, I had a whole lot of the words come going through my head, calling her, that didn't come out of my mouth. But when I hung up that phone, I told my husband, I said, "They don't want me there. They don't want me there," and they didn't. I said, "But guess what? I said, every time they open their door, they're gonna look at this black face." And guess what? They had a meeting on Wednesdays and they had a meeting on Sundays. And every time they open their door, this black face was sitting right there looking at them, smiling. See, I wasn't going there, I wasn't looking for friends. I needed to understand those 12 steps that they was talking about. I needed to understand how to get rid of this anger, this resentment, all of this. I needed to work on that if my relationship with my husband was to last. One thing I did know that those were for me, and I needed to understand them. I worked those steps. I worked out 12 of them, and I was working them by myself. And I want you to know I was wonderful. I don't recommend anybody do that. So I started going to other meetings around Houston, and they were very welcoming. And I found the sponsor, and I talked to this woman. And I told her, I says, "I really need to work the steps. I really need to understand these steps. I need to work on me." She says, "Okay, Maddie." She says, "We're gonna do the steps like this. Steps 1, 2, 3. Giving up." I said, "Okay." In the meetings, I heard, "I can't, he can, I think I'll let him." But she said, "We're gonna do 1, 2, 3, giving up." See, I had control issues. I'm the oldest of six. I took care of my siblings growing up. Didn't know I was gonna be taking care of some of them as an adult, but I knew how to control, tell you what to do, how to do it, when to do it. I knew all that. In my work profession, that's what I did. I did it well. They paid me well to do this. But I remember one time my husband said to me, when I came home, "Maddie, We're not your employees. I had to look at me. I was powerless. Not just that alcohol and everything else that he did, but I was powerless over him. If only you do as I tell you to do, everything would be okay. If you do this, this wouldn't happen. If you did, everything would be okay. I had no control. And the thing of it is, he wasn't making me miserable. I'm making myself miserable because I'm trying to control somebody else. You know, I told you I put God in my life a long time ago. So when I got to step two, I stayed on step two for a minute because I had a problem with the God. But as I talked to my sponsor about the things that happened in my life, and when I talked about that house, you know, how do you get a house with no money down? God put angels in my life and I didn't even recognize it. Angels was all around me. And then step three, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to a care of God. You know, we used to talk about God, and every time somebody talked about God, and they, I would have something else to say, very negative. My sponsor told me that I was going to have to. She kept me on step two and step three, and she says, "But I got to step three, and we was talking about it." She says, "Maddie, you're going to have to learn to have faith. Follow along in the healing. You're going to have to just trust." I had to do all of that. I did not have a God of my understanding, but as I worked those steps, and she talked to me, and we continued to talk about things that happened in my life, that was God. And I had to recognize that. Now we get to step four, five, and six. Owning up. I had to own up to my behavior. That first step we did with the four M's, the mothering, the modeling, the manipulation, the management, I did all that very well. But what I had to realize that my husband was not my child, and I treated him as such. That meant I really didn't have a whole lot of respect for him. I took on all the responsibility of a household, things that he was, that I thought he was supposed to do. I was doing it. I had no respect for him, and I treated him as if he was one of the children. I had to look at my behavior and the part that I played. When my sponsor asked me about Maddie, what's your part? Well, I'm going to tell her how wonderful I was, you know, what everything I did. But that's not what she meant. What was my part in the whole scheme of the relationship? I was self-centered a lot of times. I was holier than thou. I knew it all. And that's how I treated him. That's how I acted in my home. That was no way to have a relationship. Then I had to, when I talked to my sponsor about it, and she looked at me, she says, and I said, you know, she wanted to know how did I feel after talking about all that. You know, growing up, my sister used to tell me, my friends don't like you. And I used to tell her, I don't care if your friends don't like me. Well, I want you to know when I first finished those four M's, I didn't like me. I didn't like the way I talked to you. I didn't like the way that I made you feel on certain things. I did not like the way I behaved. You know, we used to do things that say, suck it up, buttercup. We didn't apologize for anything in our house. We hurt your feelings. Oh, well, your feelings hurt. I'm not going to tell you what my grandpa used to tell us when we would get upset. We'd say, you angry? You mad? Scratch your butt and get glad. Those were things they used to tell us when we were growing up, okay? So I did. That's what I knew. We didn't apologize for anything. So I had work to do. Then we get to seven, eight, nine. Make it up. Now, I had to make some amends. But the first people that I've made amends to, my sponsor said I had to forgive myself. Okay. I had to put myself on that list. And I did. But most importantly, I had to put my children, my son and my daughter. Because, see, I took a lot of my frustration, a lot of my anger, I took a lot out on them. And when I look back on that, when I was doing that work, that made me very sad. As a matter of fact, but I let my son hold me hostage many, many, many years. In the pro out of the program, in the program, I let my son hold me hostage until my sponsor said, "When are you gonna stop letting your son hold you hostage?" I asked her, "Do I have to make amends to CT?" I said, "I don't recall him making amends to me." He said he did, because I called him out one time. So what he says, "Y'all hear me? I'm apologizing, Matt. I'm sorry." He did that. I'm like, "Come on," but he did. But my amends to CT went like this: "CT, I'm sorry for trying to burn you up." And we went on, okay? So I'm making amends. I want to talk about my children. My daughter grew up in Al-Anon, I mean, Alateen. She grew up in Alateen. And she understood this program, but my husband started taking her to AA meetings when she was, Patrice was 5. He started taking her to AA meetings, and she would come home smelling like a little ashtray because back then, you know, they smoked in the rooms. And my mom used to say, "You let him take her to those rooms and with all those people." And the only thing I said to my mom was, "My daughter heard worse in our home, and she received more love in those rooms than she ever received. So coming home smelling like a little smokestack, that was nothing. And there was nothing said in those rooms that she hadn't heard worse out of my mouth and her dad's mouth." My son, on the other hand, he never. He said he wasn't an alcoholic, but you know, I'm his mom. If he walks like a duck, is smelling like a duck, is quacking like a duck, it's pretty much a duck, okay? We were on our way to Canada, Toronto, and it was 2015, and we had just gotten off the plane. We was changing planes, and my cell phone rang, and it was my sister. There had been a major accident on Highway 6, and the truck had caught on fire, and the individual was life flighted to the medical center. Well, that individual was my son. And I talked to the doctor, and he told me, "Whatever you're going to do, go on, do it, and we'll be here when you get back." My daughter was 9 months pregnant at that time. And she stayed. She did not leave her brother's side because she was the only family, immediate family that he had until I came back. And when I got to Toronto, I told them what was going on. And I want you to know the Al-Anon and AA members, they surrounded us with love. And when I got back, the doctor told me that my son, it would be 18 months before my son would ever walk again because he had broken many bones in his body. But my son was back. He stayed in hospital for 6 months and he was walking when he got out. And you would think, now my son was he was a type 1 diabetic, and his blood sugar level was over 400. He went into a diabetic blackout when he hit that 18-wheeler because that's what he hit. My son came home after 6 months, and you would think he would never, ever want another drink. But that day he came home, His friends came and took him out to celebrate. I could not stop my son's journey. I had been in this program long enough and worked with my sponsor long enough that my son was an adult and I had to parent him as an adult. And I remember my son used to say, I'm a grown ass man. You're right. Yes, you are. And I let him be that grown man. When my son passed, that was very painful to watch that. But I knew that the God that I serve today would keep me. And I want you to know this fellowship of Al-Anon and AA, they said, Maddie, you don't have to walk. We'll carry you. And they did. They carried us as long as we, until we could stand on our own. But that's without this program and without all of you, this fellowship, I would not have been able to do that. It's painful. If I was my son's God, he'd still be here today. But see, my son had to get the God of his understanding, and I had to let him have that journey. And I did. When he passed, he had a smile on his face, and I knew he was at peace. And I was okay. So now I'm on 10, 11, 12. Keeping up. I got to keep up with everything that I'm doing. See, I'm on this side of the dirt. And as long as I'm on this side of the dirt, I'm not going to always get it right. I'm going to mess up. I'm human. That's all there is to it. But I have these 12 steps to take me back to what I need to look at with me. 10, continue to take personal inventory and when I'm wrong, promptly admit it. Every night before I go to bed, I journal. Every night. I journal. I look at my day and I have to review my day. Did I offend someone that day? You know, I have a good day, but I always journal what good happened that day because I want to go to bed on a good note. And I've been doing this for many, many years. And when December 31st comes, the end of the year, I open up that box. I say, I had a great year because everything in there is all the good things that happened that day. Even on the worst day of my life, I still journal what good happened that day. That's a routine that I incorporated for me. That's part of my recovery for me and working these steps. Salt through prayer and meditation, I have a hard time saying, I can't do it, but I pray. I pray every day. And the only thing I can say sometimes is thank you, God. I don't ask for much. You know, I used to grieve the life that I had. I used to grieve that because we had the car, we had the house, and so forth. And I grieved that, never knowing that what was on the other side, God had a whole new plan for me. Never knowing that the life that I would have today far exceeds anything that I grieve that I lost. But it's only because of the fellowship. My husband's sober. He's doing what he's supposed to do. I'm in the program. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. God is taking care of us and he's providing for us. You know, I told you about that lady who didn't want me in the rooms. In 2009, I decided, you know, I was going to Al-Anon meetings, and every time I raise my hand and come up with an idea, I get voted down. Every time, it seemed like I just kept getting voted down. So, what do? You start your own meeting. That's all you do. And I did. I started a meeting, The Courage to Change, Missouri City. And it was in June 2009, I had my first meeting. That lady who did not want me in those rooms. Well, you know, my husband, he was still going to bees and I'm going other places. And she would always send him a message. tell Maddie I said hi. And he come home and said, Maddie, Mary Jane said hi. I said, I don't even like her. But the first day of my meeting, because I put flyers out and everything, and that first day, Mary Jane shows up with 26 of her friends the first day of my meeting. Mary Jane came to that meeting for over a year until we were able to stand on our own. And she did not live in Missouri City, and she came. But she's coming to the meeting, she's talking to me like we just best friends and all this stuff, and I got a resentment going on. Finally, one day we were talking, and I said, Mary Jane, I need to talk to you. And she says, okay, Maddie. And so I took her back to when I first came into the rooms and how she made me feel. She made amends. Mary Jane was 89 years old, and she died a week before her 50th Al-Anon birthday. You would have swore that we were best of friends because Mary Jane would call, and we'd be on the phone 2 hours. And I look at the phone, I see it's Mary Jane. I'm like, okay, let me put everything down because I know that's going to be a 2 hour conversation. And she was a girly girl, she was a beautiful woman. I showed Yvonne a picture of her today. Beautiful woman, girly girl, because every time you saw Mary Jane, she was in her 80s, late 80s. As I said, she died at 89. But when you saw her, she had her hair perfect, her makeup perfect, her nails. She was very elegant. And you could see it. She lived this program. That house that I walked away, that I got. Well, my husband decided, okay, we're back together. He's living in my house now. I loved it. I loved seeing my house. And he was living in my house. And one day he says, Maddie, I owe you a home. I says, you darn tootin', you do. You owe me a home. And so he says, go find a house. Go. I says, I want a house nobody's ever lived in. That's all there's to it. I want my own house nobody's ever lived in. And he said, okay. So we built a house. And then we built that house in 1996. So my nephew, who was living, he had three kids living in a two-bedroom apartment, paying an absorbent amount for rent monthly. I asked him if he wanted to rent my house. He said yes, so I let him rent the house. And I rented that house to him for 10 years because CCT and I are still navigating our relationship, because see, he's sober, he's in the program, but see, we're human and we're work trying to figure this thing out. And we had lots of issues between the two of us and our marriage while in the program. We had to work, we had to figure this thing out. We had to work. I didn't know if it was gonna work, so I wasn't ready to give up my home. But after 10 years, I decided, you know, I need to go and sell my house and pay it forward to my nephew. And I did. So I asked my nephew if he wanted to buy the house. He said yes. I says, okay, I'll sell it to you for the balance of it. And I did. I'm paying it forward now. Well, the man who sold, and I have the deeds to the house, the man's name, the attorney's name, all of that on the deeds. And I want to let this man know what my life is like today during that time. But I couldn't find him. I couldn't find him. I looked for him. I couldn't find him. We have a friend who's an attorney and he deals in real estate. And I says, Robert, I says, I really need to, I can't find this man. And I give him the deeds to the house and he says, Maddie, he says, you know what? I'll find, because I told Robert what I wanted to do. He says, Maddie, I'll find it. After about 6 months, Robert sends me a letter. He says, Maddie, we're still looking. A few months later, he sends me another letter. He says, Maddie, it's like this man don't exist. We can't find him anywhere. You know, God, I say angels, angels everywhere. God put people in my life at the lowest point of my life and surrounded me. God was taking care of me, and I didn't even recognize it. I didn't even acknowledge it. until I actually started working these steps and looking at me and looking at all the miracles, all the things that I thought I had lost. But I didn't lose them. God was just making plans for me to have better and more. I just had to get out of the way and do what I was supposed to do. I thought my husband was responsible for me being happy. I thought that was his response. He's my husband. Ain't he supposed to do that? And I remember one time he says, "Man, I'm not responsible for you being happy. How dare you say that to me?" So I go to my meetings and I tell him, I says, "CT said he's not responsible for me being happy." And he looked at me and she says, "Maddie, he's right. Why do you want to give him that much power over you? That's your responsibility. You're going to have to learn some self-love. You're going to have to be a little selfish," she said back then. I says, So let me tell you, I love me some me. In the room, they hear me say all the time, "I love me some me." Oh, yeah. Because that's my responsibility. I know what I like. CT knows what he likes, but we know what we like together. One of the things that I really like is those do's and don'ts. People used to ask me, "What do you like?" And I was first thing I'd tell them is what CT like, what the kids like, da 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 da. And I said, "Wait, what do you like?" Well, I couldn't tell them what I like. Okay. On those do's and don'ts, do play, find recreation and hobbies. And my sponsor asked me, she said, "What did you enjoy doing as a child?" "I love to read. I do. I love to read." And I tell, "I love to read. I love music and I love baking. I love all that." So I got back into reading, and I do. I love to read. And let me tell you, I ain't got the Bible sitting by my nightstand reading it. And no, I don't have Al-Anon literature sitting by another nightstand either. I love a good spice book. I do. And if you haven't read 50 Shades of Grey, you know it's three books. Ladies, oh, it's a good one. I love music. I love music. And I love to bake. And I put my music on and I get in the kitchen and I put my hands in the dough and I'm just thinking, what can I make? And I'm in another world. And sometimes today, when I'm doing that, I'm talking to my son. I may be cursing him out, and that's okay too. And then I just may be talking to him lovingly. But I'm in the kitchen. I'm doing my therapy. I learned to do that. Those do's and don'ts. Let me know. It's about me. It's not about him. How did I get that for you, ask? Someone asked me earlier, "How long you been in the program?" Well, I told him I've been around this program since 1986. See, that's when my husband first went in treatment. And notice I said I've been around the program. But I came into this program in January 1992. And since January 1992, I have been consistent in the rooms. I don't go to a meeting and disappear and show up 5 or 6 months later and say, "Oh, I've been around six." No. I'm consistent. I have a home group. I can go anywhere over the city of Houston and walk in the rooms, and I got a seat there. I have a seat everywhere I go. So now I got my meeting and I'm a GR. I said, okay. But before I became a GR, I wanted to go to the district meetings because I wanted to see what was happening at the district meetings. I was a member. Now I was involved in service. I was doing things, women retreats and all that, helping to organize all that kind of stuff. But I wanted to see what they were doing at district meetings. And so I started going to district meetings and just sitting there listening. So I'm going to district meetings. And when I started my group, I became a GR. So now I got a voice in the district meetings. And I'm going to district meetings. And while I'm going to district meetings, then it was an election year, and our DR was moving to another country. So the alternate DR stepped up. She became the DR, and we needed an alternate DR. Well, Annette Thornton, she was also instrumental in coming to my group. And she's sitting next to me and she hunched me and she said, "Maddie, that's you." She hunts me again. Maddie, that's you. And now I'm now to the DR. And when the election time came, I stood for DR. And now I'm DR. And I'm active in the area. And I'm going to area meetings. And I'm doing things in the area. And I'm doing things in my district. And I'm just having a good time. I'm enjoying it. I have a voice. Now for my district, I had a voice for my group. Now I have the voice for my district. And I'm going to the area meetings. Election time comes. I says, now I'm going to the regional meetings. If y'all never been to a regional meeting, you should go. So I asked them, they talking about the regional meeting. I want to know, what is the regional meetings? And so they start telling me. I said, well, can I go? See, I'm nosy like that. Can I go? And they says, yeah, you have to pay for your own way. I says, okay, that's fine. And I go, I share a room with some more women. I'm like, we love sleeping together as Al-Anon women, don't we? So I go to the regional meetings and I'm like, because see, I wanted to learn more. I wanted to learn more. And then we have an election. Now I'm on the All Texas Al team, All Texas Al-Anon Al team board. I'm serving on the board and chairing the All Texas Al-Anon Al team conference. And it's the election year, and I stand for delegate that year. Well, I didn't make delegate, and that was fine. I made alternate delegate. And then in 2020, when it was time for our election again, I stood for delegate again, and I made delegate for Texas East. I remember when we celebrated in 2021. We celebrated, I planned a big celebration for all the past delegates of Texas East to come and talk about what it was like doing their term. And we had nine past delegates living who showed up. And it was a wonderful celebration. So I told one of the delegates, no, I said out, I says, I never thought that I would represent Texas East as their delegate. And the delegate from panel 25, she looked at me and she says, Maddie, when we met you years ago, we knew that you would be our delegate one day. We was just waiting for you to get ready. See, other people watched me grow in this program. They watched me as I transformed, how I became a little bit soft in my words and my actions. I was already doing things. I really like organizing. I was already doing that. But I had to get in the fellowship, not around the fellowship. I had to get in the fellowship. When they had positions that needed to be filled, they had service work to be done. That was never a position that I considered too low for me to do. Making coffee, setting up the chairs, any of that. All that was service. Sometimes just sitting in the room for when the newcomer comes in the rooms, that's service to be able to welcome them when they come. That's service. This program has transformed my life. Now, I told you I'm human, I'm on this side of the dirt. Sometimes I have to take that queen crown because I have a crown. You have to see me when I wear my crown. On my birthday in May, I put a crown on my head. Yes, I do. But sometimes they have to take their crown and sit it to the side and speak to them in the language in which they understand. And then I put it back on, okay? But I learned how to do that lovingly in these rooms. I learned how to do that. Today, as I told you, my life is far better than I could have ever imagined because God took care of me. He surrounded me with angels. He put people in my life that I never would have met. They say we normally wouldn't mix, and you're right. Only in this room, we're all one. We're all the same. There's no big I and little U's because we all love an alcoholic, be it our husband, our wife, our children, our mom, our dad. We love an alcoholic. and our lives, my life was unmanageable. They were okay. I wasn't okay. So, all the birthday celebrants, congratulations. I'm glad you're here. Stay. If you're new, stay. Come all the way in. But before I say that, I want to talk about those 36 principles. Those 12 steps is to keep you, because I ain't committing suicide, okay? Is to keep you from committing suicide. Those 12 traditions is to keep me from committing homicide. And those 12 concepts is to keep the fellowship from committing genocide. So come all the way in, sit all the way down, and stay. Thank you all for being so welcoming. Thank you all for having me. Thank you.